The following audio may contain coarse language and other material that may not be suitable for a younger audience. Viewer discretion is advised. Also, we may spoil anything and everything, so you have been warned.
I hope so.
3, 2, 1. It was actually worse.
Sounded good on my end.
It was. Hello and welcome to the Movie Gang podcast. I am really, really sunburnt.
He looks like a lobster.
Father's Day. I went fishing with my dad, and there was cloud cover when we started, and then it wasn't, and I left the sunscreen at shore, and it just didn't go well. It's just, I have pain all over my body.
So. Jack is full of regret.
I'm joined here today with only, well, not just only, but Bobby Pike.
Yeah, how you're you, lucky Bobby? To have me.
I am lucky to have you.
I know, but not I only say, Bobby
not
Pike.
Not only as in you're the only person here, but only as in, like, you're the only other human, but we also have my dog, Jack. Say hi, Jack. Who's a cuddle monster? Who's a little cuddle monster? Oh my god, I need to stop that.
Off the rails already.
If anyone's interested by the fact that my dog has the same name as me as a person, fun story, my girlfriend had Jack before she had me, and I often feel that's how her priority list in life goes as well. He comes first. but the important thing to note is when I was meeting her father, he was at the house and he's Jack, and so like he was downstairs and you know, he's freaking out meeting the father and all that jazz. I was upstairs in Katie's bedroom. We were just hanging out. I wasn't even doing anything bad, I swear. And from downstairs, her dad had just planted some new trees, and Jack had gotten into them and chewed them down or something. I don't know. He's not that big a dog. I don't know how he managed it. But all of a sudden, I hear, "Where the fuck is Jack?" I'm just like, "I swear I didn't do anything to your daughter, sir. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Oh, my God." So, yeah, that is the story of how I got my dog.
You make a great impression, Jack.
Right? Yeah,
yes.
Of like, well, he's Northern Irish, so it was more like, "Ah!" Okay, that's actually racist, so I'm sorry. It's just, he's terrifying, so just let it roll. All right, this week we went and saw Finding Dory, and apparently we can only get two people to go see Finding Dory because everyone else is just a poser.
Yeah.
Probably more likely Father's Day plans, which is
or social
more,
lives. They might
nicer
have those
to their
too.
Fathers yeah. than we are, Bobby.
Eh.
Terrible children. But for today, we're going to be reviewing Finding Dory, the sequel to Finding Nemo, and we had some questions about the existing Pixar structure and where it was going to be going in the future. But why don't you tell us what do you think of Finding Dory, Bobby?
Well, I'm going to start by saying lots of positive things about the movie before I say lots of negative things.
That's good.
So I really thought it was...
You might want to get it in like a compliment sandwich format.
Yeah,
so like,
you know.
We can end by saying, but it's really not that bad, so that's good.
I thought that the movie was really solidly... It was a really solid sequel. It has great voice acting in it. Ellen DeGeneres, once again, does a fantastic job. And Ed O'Neill as the octopus Hank was just really fantastic. There are all these great little side characters that come in and out that are super fun and they're interesting. The movie is laugh out loud funny at various points, and I thought it was really heartfelt. I liked that they tried to tackle mental health as their big, you know, value for the piece. I thought that was an interesting place to go, probably expected giving Dory set up from Finding Nemo, but it was nice to see them go there. And so overall, I thought it was a very good film. It was a very enjoyable film. I find that the worst thing about going to see children's movies is having to see them with children, but that is just a part of the game.
I love how, like, it's a children's movie and you're complaining about the existence of the
people in the theater. I was really irritated by the children in the theater. I really was.
Well, can I be honest? I couldn't get Katie to go to this movie. So, like, when I was going to the theater, I came straight from covering an event. So I was in a suit and tie, and I got really weirded out because I was seeing a children's movie at 9:45 at night in a suit and tie, and like black tie, like I had a tuxedo on and was
so
walking into
you
a movie
like
theater.
A child molester.
Well, I did, and that was the funny thing. It's like, he gave me a weird look, and I felt weird, and then I just bought two tickets. I was like, my girlfriend will be in a minute. And it's funny, too, because I usually don't have a problem seeing movies by myself. I really don't. But, like, I felt so awkward, because it was just like, I was out of dress, I look weird, everyone was looking at me like, where the fuck is this person going to Finding Dory in a tux at 9:49 at night? But it was the only time I could see it, and I am more devoted to this cast than anyone else, you motherfuckers who couldn't show up today. Not you, Bobby, you're perfect.
I'm
you're
here.
Wonderful. Yeah, you're here. Everyone else is a fuck.
I'm sure they'll be thrilled to hear that.
Finding Dory at 9:45 at night in a tuxedo.
Yeah, no, I kind of felt weird being an adult going to see this movie on opening weekend by myself without a small child attached to me.
And here's the thing. I think it's funny to me because, like, I don't actually feel that way about a lot of other Pixar films.
No, I don't know, like, why I felt that way about this one.
No. I stand by this, my original comment about the original Finding Nemo. This is something that, like, I understand that, like, I'm not actually going to fully understand. The original Finding Nemo is the most kid movie of any of the Pixar movies. Now, in terms of, like, you know, there's a lot of, like, back end stuff. There's a lot of interesting things going on WALL-E. And they're all kids movies, but, like, it kind of has that more simplistic logic and interest to it. A lot of people have told me that as parents, it is the deepest thing in the world, and they really love watching it with their children because it's enjoyable as a children's movie, but then, like, the deepness goes off into the corner in terms of having children and growing up with them and training. And, like, well, you don't train your children, but you know what I mean.
You do your best.
Have children. I was like, train children. He doesn't have children.
It's very
that's
obvious.
All, that's all we've established for our podcast listeners.
Get back
so
in
far,
your cage, but, Harold. Go.
I don't. I think like, for me, it's always been the most kiddie, and thus for me, Finding Nemo has always been the least interesting Pixar film. And that's funny too, because I would not. Cars is obviously the worst one.
Yeah.
To me, and at the same time, like, I think, like, Finding Nemo is better, but I find Cars more visually and rewatchably interesting to me. I don't know, maybe that's just because I'm just predetermined by all the kids screaming about Nemo, and that's just like that thing that happens, you know.
Yeah, that, but it was really popular with kids, but it also really, I think it makes sense for parents to really like watching that movie because it really capitalizes on that panic of losing your child. And so, right. I think that makes it a more intense emotional film if you actually have one, but I don't. Yeah. So
a lot of people have said that, like, it's a good experience for children and parents to, like, emotionally understand each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably for the first one. It's less true of this one, and I think that's the good thing. Is, like, this, I think you're, well, go ahead. I will let you vocalize your main problems with this movie in a minute.
I have a couple sandwich problems with this movie. To go off of what we were just talking about, I do have a little bit of an issue with the values in this film, in that I really feel like it's, the plot of the movie is Dory has lost her parents or gotten lost from her parents and needs to go find them. And it's really completely focused on this absolute terror of realizing that you're alone and your family isn't there anymore, which is a very real experience for a lot of kids. I mean, do you remember being a small child and going to the grocery store with your mom and having her go to get something in a different aisle and then feeling like you were lost forever because you couldn't see her? It's that,
right,
that very primal terror of being alone. And I guess,
right,
I don't love that that's what the entire film hinged upon, is this childlike terror.
I disagree because I think they're getting there's no reason for her to not go find her parents. I really did expect for her parents to be dead. Like,
I did think we were going to get another dead parents twist in Finding
which
Nemo.
Which was actually, in this context, because it was building up to the parents already being dead, and it was definitely a flip on the existing Disney structure,
yeah,
of dead parents. Like, I actually was thought that'd be a good payoff, but I still think them being alive and her actually finding them was amazing payoff, and the shells was such a great moment.
The shells was a beautiful moment. There were some really great things about it. I just really kind of, there were a couple moments of it that were sad, and I don't mean,
well,
not
it's
in that,
supposed to be.
But not in that saccharine Disney Pixar kind of sad, that kind of this could really, like, scare a small child. And I say that specifically because there was one screaming her head off behind me who got really, really terrified that Dory was never,
right,
gonna, Dory's mommy and daddy were dead. And
I mean, this is the thing. But I'm going to stop you here for just 1 second. And I think the issue for me is, like, Disney and Pixar have been doing more interesting moralistic things than most, like, mainstream movies.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's the thing. Like, this might be the point that they're going off the deep end a little bit. I mean, but that's the thing is, like, Miyazaki films, like, mm-hmm. are deeply terrifying in their own way and are still children's movies. Though I'm not going to lie, some Miyazaki films should not be categorized yeah. as children's movies. And I think there's, like, elements in here the same. Like, I feel, for me, that was, like, showing the terror of mental illness and, to some extent, Alzheimer's and other, mental illnesses. Like, it shows, like, the terror of not being able to take care of yourself and feeling, it was an amazing representation, especially with the weeds and, yeah. and the emptiness and everything that was there. It was a beautifully done moment that was horrifying. And because what it was trying to represent and show the audience is a deeply disturbing, horrifying thing.
Right. And I do think what they actually tackled with the mental health issue was really well done and well put together. I liked the message that they ended up kind of sending through the end of, what would Dory do? And it's kind of a, you might not be good at everything, but you can do it in your own way as long as you're doing your best. And I did like, that was a very saccharine, sweet yeah. message that I thought they did a really great job pushing yeah. forward.
Well, I mean, I think, like, it was a good message, and I think, like, there's a lot of good deep messages in this movie. I'm just confused why. Do you think that the movie is necessarily worse or bad for trying to show in a negative light the terrors of mental illness?
No, I don't think it's worse for that. I just think that there were some elements that they were showing that are scary.
It was scary.
And I guess I just... I don't want the world to be sugar-coated and all that kind of crap. But at the same time, I do think that it went just a little bit too far on the scary in some places, since Finding Nemo itself was this bright, colorful story that really, really appeals to small children. And since, I just think it may have gone a little too deep for that audience of how young the kids are who tend to see these sort of movies.
I will accept this criticism on one level. I think there are more esoterically terrifying moments in Pixar movies, but I think they're quite a bit more subtextual than Dory's absolute terror.
Yeah, I think in this case, it was just a little... It was more in the forefront than most Pixar usually does. It's usually... The terror's usually on the background, I feel.
It's the background. It's like, this is... Like, if you think about it, holy crap, they're going through this emotional consequence, whereas this individual is actually experiencing a horrifying situation.
Yeah.
Which is... I agree. Like, I think... Like, I had children in my theater as well who were wondering about the weird tuxedo man in the corner. Like, I'm sure that, like, somebody took a picture of me there, and they're like, they're gonna have, like, a Slenderman thought of, like, I had, like, long, lanky arms, and I don't know.
You're gonna be on Reddit here. Somewhere.
Who's that creepy man at the door? No. But the whole bit with that, I have to admit, like, as a moviegoer, it was kind of what I always wanted to see in a Pixar movie, which is funny to me because that I'm so happy that moment was in there.
Yeah.
Because, like, it raises up to a level of enjoyment for me. I agree. You might be right. I think you might be right in that it's a little bit too direct and horrifying for kids, especially when Nemo is, to my mind, the most little kid-friendly movie of the Pixar bunch.
Yeah.
Because Pixar builds it up in that way, and like, there is, like, a different... There is an age difference in terms of the movies I would show people, because, like, you got that, like, preteen, mm-hmm. like, 10-year-old Incredibles level, and I think, like, Nemo is the youngest that I would show.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that it just attracts a much younger audience because of the type of story it's telling and the way the animation is done, using that amount of, brightness and simplicity in the characters and the color and everything. It would appeal youngest.
Yeah. No, I think, oh man, it's just, I don't know, like, how much we want to focus on it. I think for me, like, it's a good moment.
Yeah. But we can break, we can talk about a different problem I had with the film.
I think I agree with that. I think that's a good issue, is like, how, you know, what do you put in your film and what do you not put in your film? For me, like, it's a good thing. Jack, come back over. Come here, boy.
The third Sorry member of that, our guys. Podcast is slacking off.
He's just chilling by the door, like, when is my Katie gonna come home? When's mommy coming home? And I'm like, mommy's never coming home, baby, because Jack's a bastard. Not you, this Jack. No, I'm just kidding. She's in Texas. I did not steal her dog in a vicious breakup.
Well, good. That would be terrible.
Right. I know. Dog stealers are the worst people.
Scum of the earth. Not good stuff.
I don't know. I was going to come up with something they're worse than, and I was going to say pedophiles, but like...
Nah.
Because I've had so many tuxedo pedophile jokes on this cast, I think I need to switch it up. So
I think we need a new joke.
Yeah. So what else did you have? What other problems did you have with this movie?
I had an issue with the reality break in this film. And I know that's going to sound absurd saying, as we're talking about an animated movie. And I know that in the world of Disney and Pixar... occasionally we do some really absurd things. I know that sometimes, you know, inanimate objects come to life and dance around and talk and all that crap. But Finding Nemo, like, created the set of laws that I think that Finding Dory should have followed. Finding Nemo took place in the ocean. The characters involved were all, like, ocean characters doing regular ocean character things. The sea turtles were swimming and, like, the jellyfish stung and everything made sense. You know, it followed a logical order. Finding Dory ignores a logical order. The majority of the film takes place in the ocean display, the, you know, sea park or whatever, and the fish are somehow able to traverse the land very easily. An octopus can do absolutely fucking incredible things, and the movie concludes with an octopus driving a fucking truck. Okay. You know, there reached a point in the film where we were no longer following the rules that I felt were set
up
in the original, and it bothered me.
About a movie with talking fish.
Talking fish don't bother me in that you can set up the laws so that that is how it exists.
Bobby, talking fish should bother you. If you see a talking fish, you need to tell somebody about it.
Yeah, we're friends. It's fine.
I know.
No, I don't understand why we needed to have, like, a film that went, like, the characters went so far out of the reality that was originally created. You know, like, I can buy the seagull and the bucket, okay? That's how we can carry the fish around into different areas. I can buy that. I don't buy them jumping out of a fish tank and then flopping across a fountain, magically getting blasted up, and then somehow magically ending up in the water again. And the pipes kept conveniently coming up all the time, and it got to a point where it was just like, it was a break. It was a reality break.
Apparently the pipes just are totally connected between all the seaways.
Every single
places.
Sea thing ever is connected in those pipes. Apparently.
I know. It was hilarious. And they can't get lost in there. And it's like, I'm just like, Jesus.
Well, and that's
Christ.
Also apparently how echolocation works. That's really accurate for how echolocation works. You go,
okay,
Aah!
I'm sorry. That was hilarious.
It was funny, but it was absurd.
He's like, I'm getting something. And no, of course it was. Both the whale shark and the whatever the hell that other thing, beluga, I think, was. Both of those were absolutely hilarious. And I think that's the issue, is that it really was a movie about talking about disabilities, and it talked about interesting, like, he was essentially a hypochondriac, thought
yep.
he couldn't use it to his post, and she was nearsighted.
Yep.
And I think it was really they were both characters that were pushing the other elements of, like, different sorts of disabilities and overcoming them. I mean, and again, she doesn't overcome, but she just uses her, she, like, finds friendship and uses that and helps somebody else overcome their disability. I mean, there's a complicated message in there, but, like, at the same time, like, it's not that bad. In question of the reality of this film, I agree. It is more of a break from reality than Finding Nemo. I think the quality, this is why I don't love Pixar sequels. And I will never rate this film as high as Finding Nemo.
No.
I actually think this movie has a better set of values in terms of what I'd want a kid to see to understand mental health. I think it doesn't feel like a clean sequel to Nemo. Like, they're making a sequel. They had to go in and like, because Nemo is a very complete setup and execution. It wasn't a movie that was ever needed a sequel. And now we're here. And I think that's apparent and that they wanted to take it to a new interesting thing, and they do it in clever ways. I love when they comes up and he's like, my friend Sigourney. Yeah. There were so many great moments.
There were a lot of really great moments in the movie. I don't want to, you know, act like I hated it. I didn't, you know, I have to shit on it a little bit because that's fun and makes interesting.
No, I'm not jumping on board with you. I think I disliked it. I think I disliked elements as well. It doesn't hang together as perfectly as Finding Nemo did. Finding Nemo was an excellent beat movie in terms of going beat to beat to beat to beat and flowing through. This movie has lulls. This movie has issues. This movie doesn't flow as well. And there's kind of some horrifying moments in there. Like when him and his son are just like literally like are like suffocating to death on the stone. I'm just like, every once in a while, I'm just like, fuck, dude. Fuck.
There were really some moments in there that were a little just concerning.
Well, I think this is issues. This is another issue. Maybe they're expecting the Finding Nemo kids to have aged and going back into this. Because this was one of my favorite things about Toy Story is that they did Toy Story 2. I was older. When they did Toy Story 3, I was in college, as was Andy. Because I literally aged with Andy growing up in the three Toy Story movies. And God damn it, Toy Story 3 wasn't a punch to the nuts.
Oh, yeah, that
like,
was
brutal. I don't even think it's a great movie, but like it's such a punch to the nuts. And it's such a perfect completion to the string that the original Toy Story hit. And
Pixar knows how to make you cry.
No. It was really good. I cried in Toy Story 3, and I didn't have that much of a visceral reaction in Toy Story 1, even though that is a far superior movie. I think that's the case here. I think I had a more visceral reaction to Finding Dory because of my thoughts on mental illness and the fact that like they were daring enough to go there.
Yeah.
I think what they have to say in this movie is better and more appealing to an older audience. I think the movie as itself doesn't hang together anywhere like even remotely as well as Finding Nemo, because Finding Nemo is Pixar perfect. And then there's those first couple of Pixar films, Wall-E, Incredibles, Finding Nemo, Toy Story, like they just hang together so goddamn well. And I think it's because it's originals, and that's the thing, is it's really sad to see Pixar moving away from this kind of thing. I gotta stop right there, and we're gonna hear a word from our sponsors.
The Movie Gang Podcast is sponsored by What Katie Read. Head on over to youtube.com and check out the latest BookTube channel hosted by Catherine Boyd. Are you an advertiser looking to get your product noticed by a devoted audience? Contact Jack Newman at newmanvisualproductions.com for advertising space on the Movie Gang Podcast. While you're over there, check out the range of photography and video services provided by Newman Visual Productions. That's newmanvisualproductions.com.
You should go check those guys out. They seem pretty cool. Yeah, I actually don't know commercials I'm going to be running.
But whatever they are, you should check it out.
Whatever they are, they're amazing.
Yeah.
They're so amazing. Check it out.
We totally endorse them, whatever it is.
Look, little Jack's jumping up on my leg. He's... You want to talk about the short film, the pre-short film?
Yeah, so I really liked the short film before Finding Dory. It was called Piper, and it was about a little sandpiper basically finding independence.
Is that what that bird was? Because I was curious about the title.
Yeah, okay, cool. That's a sandpiper.
Okay, cool.
So it was like there was a mama sandpiper and a baby sandpiper, and the baby sandpiper needed to learn how to feed itself and take care of itself. And I thought the animation for Piper was just absolutely stunning. That opening shot where you see the foam on the water rolling in absolutely beautiful. I love everything about Disney Pixar shorts. They're so well crafted. They're a complete story. I like the ones that are serious, and I like the ones that are funny. I really enjoyed this one. I think it fits well into the rest of the shorts that they've done. I thought it was sweet. I thought it was well put together. I love the nonverbal shorts. I kind of have only nice things to say about it. I actually enjoyed the short better than I enjoyed the actual film. So.
Ooh, rough. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I like this movie. I loved Lava, which was the opening short film for Inside Out.
Yeah.
I didn't see The Good Dinosaur, so...
I didn't see The Good Dinosaur either.
I don't know. It's funny. There's like a lost short film at the beginning of The Good Dinosaur that we just have no idea what it was. I'd actually probably go buy a ticket to just see it and then just get the fuck
out. And then
out.
Just leave. Because that was not one of the better ones from what I've heard.
I think this was good. I think it has some great moments. I think there are more poignant Pixar shorts. And I think that's the thing is, for a lot of the Pixar movies, like I you'll notice that like I love Pixar movies when they're making a good children's movie that is also unbelievably deeply sad and worldly. Like it has deep emotional issues. Like I love Monsters University, and I think that's the thing is like I'm going to compare Finding Dory to Monsters University in that Monsters University takes the original set and just takes it in a new different direction and uses an entirely different movie mm-hmm. with a much deeper interesting really difficult issue at hand, because like the plot, again, Ben has said it before on this cast, but the plot of the moralistic value of Monsters University is essentially like, you may not be as good as you think.
You're
not
fucking special.
You can't achieve your dreams, but it'll be okay. Like it's a crazy fucking moral and value. But at the same time, it's so special and so important that we have people, especially in this day and age with millennials and everything, not to be offensive to millennials, but I
we
do
are
think
them,
that
so, you
well,
know,
we are them right now. sorry, my girlfriend's texting me. There's something important about a banking appointment that she needs. Okay. Whatever, I don't care. Yeah, hopefully she doesn't need it immediately. I'm a terrible boyfriend. I'm watching her dog. Come on, give me credit.
All right. Need a little credit.
But the point about Piper is like I think it has a great moment. It doesn't have a great value. I mean, it has a great value underlying in terms of like leaving the nest, which is important in terms of Dory because it's all about children. And I think it's funny that I'm glad this piece is. The animation is perfect. It's just much less literal. I think it's better than Lava, actually, as I think about it. Lava was just amazingly beautiful and just it's funny too because this one has a better moralistic value, but Lava just made me like want to cry. Like we just couldn't be with the person he loves.
Yeah.
But that's funny. It's not like sometimes you don't end up with the person you love. So I'm waiting for that Pixar short film where it's just like somebody loves somebody entirely and it's trying to make it not creepy, but like it's totally is fucking creepy. Like,
maybe that'll be
like
the next
sometimes
one.
Sometimes you love really somebody and they don't love you back.
They're really starting to push the envelope over there. Maybe we will start getting some of those hard life lesson movies.
I fucking prefer this shit to The Good Dinosaur and just kind of some milquetoast bullshit.
Yeah, I don't want a one level like, children's movie. That's always been the great thing about Disney Pixar is they're going to provide you something that you can watch as a parent and be amused by and enjoy, and you can also have something that your kids understand on their level. And that's what makes them so special. So for them to, you know, dumb themselves down is disappointing.
Well, this is the thing, too, because I would actually say, like, Pixar movies work on much deeper levels in terms of just being good narrative structures that support a moralistic value at the end. Whereas, like, Zootopia, like, its value is much more on the surface and ingrained in kind of the mechanics of the plot as opposed to it being an underlying value based upon the journey that the protagonist goes through.
That's true.
Like, there's nothing in Finding Dory about mental illness. It's the mental illness that the protagonist goes through and is fighting and talking about that is the moralistic value of the film. Versus like Zootopia, it's about the world and, you know, the protagonist is going through it, but it's on, right there out on the surface about racism and everything else going on.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing is like Frozen and like a lot of the Disney movies, like they're making great movies and they're getting, and it's getting a lot better, but they're not, it's not like, it's not like, ugh, I hate to keep bringing up Wally, but it's not Wally. Like,
no.
Like that, the progression of his character is what is interesting about that. And like that love and just that view of that world is just amazing. And the same thing with like Toy Story, like Woody and Buzz and like, and these characters go through these things. And the thing is Cars does actually have like a great value, but now as we're moving into Pixar, and I think the issues people are concerned about is like, are we plumbing the library to make money now? Like down to Disney owns Pixar. Are we plumbing the library? Are we flushing out the talent? And I don't think that's true because I think Dory, while it was a sequel, was still in the vein of Monsters University in that it had a very good deep point and it doubled down on itself. And that's the thing is like, I'm much more happy with these movies, even though they're not in the same vein and the same greatness as the original Pixar's. I don't know that anything ever will be. And sometimes because again, I was younger when I saw those movies. I don't think, like, I'm so glad they're doubling down on their own formula as opposed to trying to be something else, which is, I don't know, Disney light, as it were.
Yeah. No, which I agree.
Which is, to me, concerning with The Good Dinosaur and other things. So I think, I mean, I guess there's not, like, people are like, oh, Pixar's dying. But I don't think that's true at all. Like, with Inside Out and now this one, I think they're going to be around for quite a while. So
I think
The Good Dinosaur is their first true flop, though. So, you know.
Yeah.
God does bleed.
They can fail. Not everything they put out is amazing.
Well, it's okay. I think it's a good time to like that. And I think that the issue is that we do observe that the quality of everything coming out is not as good.
Yeah.
But I think the issue is, like, I think we need to recognize that that first original run was just unbelievably good because it was just magic at the time. Like, we're not going to get magic, but we're going to keep getting good movies.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we can recapture
the... And that's the thing is, I'm happy with Dory, and I think that's the difference. And that's the thing is, because I'm not very... I wasn't, like, amazed by Piper like you were. I thought it was... I love short films. Short films are much more easy to compose and have a direct emotional reaction. And that's the funny thing is, Lava had such a better emotional reaction to me, even though it was less proficient as a film overall. Which is the issue is, because I have different standards for animated... not for animated, but short films in general.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Bobby. So, compliment sandwich. You said you liked Finding Dory, but let's go ahead and give Piper a rating. Just Piper.
Just Piper? Well, just yeah, Piper. Let's see what's... I'd probably give it an 8. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was well crafted, and I thought it... I did think it was appropriate to be the short film for Finding Dory, because I thought that the message that it pushed along was very much in the same vein as the message of Finding Dory, which was really sweet. But I'm still just blown away by that animation, and I really thought it was a sweet little short film.
Oh, it's amazing. It's unbelievably well animated. It's put together well. I would think I'd give it an 8 as well. Yeah. I think it has a good emotional beat. I think finding Dory is a much more proficient, but again, the movie doesn't hang together quite as well. And well, we're good to that. What's your score for Finding Dory? Let's go ahead and do this in order.
My score for Finding, I'd give it a 7. I did enjoy the film, and I think it is a great children's movie. All the things that I'm bitching about, no kid is going to pick up on. They're going to like the movie. It's sweet and it's amusing, and they do throwbacks to Finding Nemo with the sea turtles, and that's fun. And the cast of zany characters that you encounter along the way, like the sea lions and then the derpy sea lion. It's just, I mean, there's some really great moments in it. I love that they tackled mental health as an issue, and yeah, some parts of it get really dark, but it is overall well done and well put together, and I think it is a great sequel to Finding Nemo. I think it is for a slightly older audience than Finding Nemo was, but I think it's still really solid and, you know, definitely stands up to the rest of the Pixar world.
Yeah, I think I'm not pirating your scores, I swear, but I'm going to give it a 7 as well.
We're just on the same brainwave today.
Well, no, I like this movie. I like this movie. It is a good movie, and that is, like, you know, a 5 is above a 5 is a recommendation. 6 is kind of a meh recommendation. 7 is a good movie. This is a good movie. It is not, if you have kids, you should see this damn movie. I mean, there's no question in my mind whether or not, if you have kids, you should see this movie. But again, Finding Dory has all, and the Nemo series to some extent, has always been the most kiddie-esque movies in the Pixar franchise. And as a result, I don't think it has a lot of pull for younger audiences, like, to the point that, like, I don't look at people weird when they're going into The Incredibles. I felt weird going into Finding Dory. I think there is like a definable difference between that and a lot of the other Pixar movies. Like, I would have no problem with somebody jumping into WALL-E and being like, yeah, it's a beautiful film. Finding Dory is a kid's movie, and there is a damn difference there, and that's unfortunate to some extent, but there you go. So I think it's a good movie. 7. If you have kids, go see it. I don't necessarily know that it's going to be the all-time favorites. I mean, I think this is going to be, it's not Cars 2 by any stretch.
No.
It's definitely in the same vein of Monsters University. Not as good as Monsters University, because it's the only, I mean, I still like, I, it's not really any as good as any of the original movies either, But at the same, I mean, better than The Good Dinosaur. Fuck The Good Dinosaur. Again, I haven't seen it, so I can't say that, but I assume so. as does everyone else that hasn't gone and actually seen that movie. We don't know. It could be great.
I think you got to have kids to go see that one. I just can't do it. And I feel weird. I feel old and weird. Not good.
We are old and weird, Bobby. It's just
stop
the truth.
Reminding me.
So the official rating for Piper is an 8 from the Movie Gang podcast, and the official rating for Finding Dory is a 7. All right, bets for next week before we reveal this week's winner. The Neon Demon is opening next week.
It is.
Currently, the tomato meter for top critics has it at a 33% rotten. I know, I did not see that coming.
No, I didn't either.
But here it is. Average rating is a 0 out of 10. Okay.
Well, then.
Reviews counted are only 6, 2 fresh and 4 rotten.
Wow.
So that's top critics. There's basically no one on there right now.
Yeah. That doesn't give us a lot to work with.
Right. So, and looking at that too, like considering that, like, you know, currently Finding Dory's at a 95% on all critics, and that's out of reviews counted 170, understanding that 46 is for top critics. So let's say that for The Neon Demon, though it's interesting, I bet we'll attract more top critics because it's more of an indie film, or we'll see how it works out.
Yeah.
But out of 6, understanding that 46 will probably be the final answer, where do you think the tomato meter will be by this time next week? For the top critics of The Neon Demon, where it's currently at a 33%.
Well, I think it'll get some more positive reviews, but I guess if the bulk of them at the beginning are negative, they're probably not going to do super great. So I'm going to say 50%.
I think that's a good bet. I'm going to come under you at 40%. I think... Though I haven't seen it, so I cannot say. The current all critics rating is about a 49% with 39 counted. So that's a pretty stable dislike on Rotten Tomatoes, I'd think. Like, I think it could be under where. Who's to say it'll be under 50, but at the same time, like...
Maybe someone will take the over and screw us, you know? Never know.
Well, you never know. Oh, I mean, I think the thing is, like, especially at this, like, because it is Sunday night, 6/19/2016, right now on Father's Day. Like, I mean, there's not a lot of critics that'll have seen it. I'm sure the early buzz is out, but it's definitely not been viewed. It opens next week. And we'll see what people think of it then. So they'll have a weekend to have the majority of the critics out, which will be the majority of the individuals, and we'll see what they think. So, all right. Closing out the short. Last week we bet, I already sort of alluded to it, but last week we took a bet on where we thought Finding Dory would do on the Rotten Tomatoes meter for top critics. And if I look in the Movie Gang Bets channel, Bobby bet that it would be above, she bet that it would be 90%. Ben came in at 81%. Peter came in at 77%, and I came in at 85%, and the top critics for Finding Dory are currently at 89%. That means, Bobby, you have won the bet this week for Finding Dory.
Finally!
I know.
I never win anything! This is so exciting!
Your life is terrible.
I know that this is my highlight right now. I get to talk. I get to talk, guys! This never happens.
You have won the rights and responsibility to close out the show, let us know your Twitter handle, and all the things that we should know. And if you have disagreed with me at any point in this cast, you can let me know what you think. Also, if you have any rant at all, you can go ahead and put it on here. So, Bobby Pike, your first Movie Gang podcast show closing.
Well, my true passion is actually going to come up in a future podcast, so my true rant will be featured at a later date. But in the meantime, I want to tell you guys, hug your local journalist. I say that, and I'm biased because I am one, but let me tell you guys, we got a hard gig, okay? Journalists, people tend to spend a lot of time yelling about the media and what the media tells them or doesn't tell them, what the media manipulates or doesn't manipulate. There's a lot of blame cast there. And not to say that all of it isn't warranted. There are definitely bad journalists, there's bad organizations, and there are people doing bad work. But I would encourage people to look on their local level as far as information sourcing. I know that most people don't want to pay for media anymore. You think you can just go on the internet and get everything that you want, but someone had to curate that information. Someone had to put it together. And if you want the most accurate information that's going to directly impact your life, you should be looking towards your local newspaper or your local television station. And on that level, I think you're going to find really quality information that's going to really affect the choices that you make and the world that you live in. And try to be nice to those people. I know sometimes journalists screw people over and that makes you mad, but they are human beings. And I can tell you that from all the people that I've ever worked with who are in journalism and work in the press, all they want to do is inform the public. They just want you to have more information and they want you to know stuff. So keep your eyes open and your ears open and pay attention to the world that's around you. And don't just cast blame on this invisible media figure because you don't like how things are going. You know, get more information, be an informed person, especially with an election coming up. So that's all for the Movie Gang podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you want to yell at me on Twitter, I'd love to hear from you. My Twitter handle is at Bobby21. That's BOBBYE21. Hit us up on our Facebook page and at the Movie Gang podcast Twitter. We'd love to hear what you guys think of our show, as well as if you have any ideas for what we should be doing. Stay tuned. We're going to give you guys some bios soon so you can get to know the cast members a little bit better. Check out for those on Facebook at a later date. And we hope you tune in next time. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.